3. The owner of the Flying A was a fat man, the counter cutting into his belly, and he leaned on his elbows to track my movements around the aisles, my purse banging against my thighs. There was a newspaper open in front of him, though he never seemed to turn the page. He had a weary air of responsibility about him, both bureaucratic and mythological, like someone doomed to guard a cave for all eternity. I was alone that afternoon, Connie probably fuming in her small bedroom, playing positively Fourth Street with wounded, righteous indulgence. The thought of Peter was gutting. I wanted to skim over that night, calcifying my shame into something blurry and manageable, like a rumor about a stranger. I tried to apologize to Connie, the boys still worrying over the motorcycle like field medics. I even offered to pay for repairs, giving Henry everything I had in my purse, $8, which he'd accepted with a stiff jaw. After a while, Connie said it was best if I just went home. I'd gone back a few days later. Connie's father answered the door almost instantly, like he'd been waiting for me. He usually worked at the dairy plant past midnight, so it was odd to see him at home. "Connie's upstairs," he said. On the counter behind him, I saw a glass of whiskey, watery and catching the sunlight. I was so focused on my own plans that I didn't pick up the air of crisis in the house, the unusual information of his presence. Connie was lying on her bed, her skirt hitched so I could see the crotch of her white underwear, the entirety of her stippled thighs. She sat up when I entered, blinking. "Nice makeup," she said. "Did you do that just for me?" She threw herself back on the pillow. "You'll like this news. Peter's gone. Like, gone. With Pamela. Kel surprise." She rolled her eyes, but articulated Pamela's name with a perverse happiness, cutting me a look.
"What do you mean, left?"
Panic was already dislocating my voice.
"He's so selfish," she said. "Dad told us we might have to move to San Diego. The next day, Peter takes off. He took a bunch of his clothes and stuff. I think they went to her sister's house in Portland. I mean, I'm pretty sure they went there." She blew at her bangs. "He's a coward, and Pamela is the kind of girl who's going to get fat after she has a baby."
"Pamela's pregnant?"
She gave me a look.
"Surprise. You don't even care I might have to move to San Diego?"
I knew I was supposed to start enumerating the ways I loved her, how sad I would be if she left, but I was hypnotized by an image of Pamela next to Peter in his car, falling asleep against his shoulder. Avis maps at their feet gone translucent with hamburger grease, the back seat filled with clothes and his mechanic manuals. How Peter would look down and see the white line of Pamela's scalp through her part. He might kiss her, moved by a domestic tenderness, even though she was sleeping and would never know.
"Maybe he's just messing around," I said. "I mean, couldn't he still show up?"
"Screw you," Connie said.
She seemed surprised by these words, too.
"What'd I even do to you?"
I said. Of course, we both knew.
"I think I'd rather be alone right now,"
Connie announced primly, and stared hard out the window. Peter fleeing north with the girlfriend who might even have his baby? There was no imagining the biology away, the fact of the multiplying proteins in Pamela's stomach. But here was Connie, her chubby shape on the bed, so familiar that I could map her freckles, point out the blip on her shoulder from chickenpox. There was always Connie, suddenly beloved.
"Let's go to a movie or something," I said.
She sniffed and studied the pale rim of her nails.
"Peter's not even around anymore," she said. "So you really have no reason to be here. You're going to be at boarding school anyway."
The hum of my desperation was obvious.
"Maybe we can go to the Flying A?"
She bit her lip.
"May says you're not very nice to me."
May was the dentist's daughter. She wore plaid pants with matching vests,
like a junior accountant.
You said May was boring.
Connie was quiet. We used to feel sorry for May, who was rich but ridiculous. But I understood that now Connie was feeling sorry for me, watching me pant after Peter, who'd probably been planning to go to Portland for weeks. Months.
May's nice, Connie said. Real nice.
We could all see a movie together. I was peddling now, for any kind of traction, a bulwark against the empty summer. May wasn't so bad, I told myself, even though she wasn't allowed to eat candy or popcorn because of her braces, and yes, I could imagine it, the three of us.
She thinks you're trashy, Connie said.
She turned back to the window. I stared at the lace curtains I had helped Connie hem with glue when we were 12. I had waited too long, my presence in the room an obvious error. And it was clear there was nothing to do but leave, to say a tight-throated goodbye to Connie's father downstairs. He gave me a distracted nod and clatter my bike out into the street.
Had I ever felt alone like this before? The whole day to spend and no one to care? I could almost imagine the ache in my gut as pleasure. It was about keeping busy, I told myself, a frictionless burning of hours. I made a martini, the way my father had taught me, sloshing the vermouth over my hand and ignoring the spill on the bar table. I'd always hated martini glasses. The stem and the funny shape seemed embarrassing, like the adults were trying too hard to be adults. I poured it in a juice cup instead, rimmed with gold, and forced myself to drink. Then I made another and drank that too. It was fun to feel loose and amused with my own house, realizing, in a spill of hilarity, that the furniture had always been ugly, chairs as heavy and mannered as gargoyles. To notice the air was candied with silence, that the curtains were always drawn. I opened them and struggled to lift a window. It was hot outside. I imagined my father snapping that I was letting the warm air in, but I left the window open anyway. My mother would be gone all day, the liquor aiding the shorthand of my loneliness. It was strange that I could feel differently so easily, that there was a sure way to soften the crud of my own sadness. I could drink until my problem seemed compact and pretty, something I could admire. I forced myself to like the taste, to breathe slowly when I felt nauseous. I burbled acrid vomit onto my blankets, then cleaned, so there was just a tart, curdled spice in the air that I almost liked. I knocked over a lamp and put on dark eye makeup with inexpert but avid attention. Sat in front of my mother's lighted mirror with its different settings. Office, daylight, dusk. Washes of colored light, my features spooking and bleaching as I clicked through the artificial day. I tried reading parts of books I liked when I was young. A spoiled girl gets banished underground to a city ruled by goblins. The girl's bared knees in her childish dress, the woodcuts of the dark forests. The illustrations of the bound girl stirred me, so I had to parcel how long I could look at them. I wished I could draw something like that, like the terrifying inside of someone's own mind. Or draw the face of the black-haired girl I'd seen in town, studying her long enough so I could see how the features worked together. The hours I lost to masturbation, face pressed into my pillow, passing some point of caring. I'd get a headache after a while, muscles jumpy, my legs quivering and tender, my underpants wet, the tops of my thighs. Another book, a silversmith accidentally spills molten silver on his hand. His arm and hand probably looked skinned after the burn had scabbed over and peeled. The skin tight and pink and fresh, without hair or freckles. I thought of Willie and his stump, the warm hose water he sloshed over his car.
how the puddles would slowly evaporate from the asphalt. I practiced peeling an orange as if my arm were burned to the elbow and I had no fingernails. Death seemed to me like a lobby in a hotel. Some civilized, well-lit room you could easily enter or leave. A boy in town had shot himself in his finished basement after getting caught selling counterfeit raffle tickets. I didn't think of the gore, the wet insides, but only the ease of the moment before he pulled the trigger. How clean and winnowed the world must have seemed. All the disappointments, all of regular life with its punishments and indignities, made surplus in one orderly motion. The aisles of the store seemed new to me, my thoughts formless from drinking. The constant flickering of the lights, stale lemon drops in a bin, the makeup arranged in pleasing, fetishistic groupings. I uncapped a lipstick to test it on my wrist, like I'd read I should. The door rang its chime of commerce. I looked up. It was the black-haired girl from the park, in denim sneakers, a dress whose sleeves had been cut at the shoulder. Excitement moved through me. Already I was trying to imagine what I would say to her. Her sudden appearance made the day seem tightly wound with synchronicity, the angle of sunlight newly weighted. The girl wasn't beautiful, I realized, seeing her again. It was something else, like pictures I had seen of the actor John Huston's daughter. Her face could have been an error, but some other process was at work. It was better than beauty. The man behind the counter scowled.
"I told you," he said, "I won't let any of you in here. Not anymore. Get on."
The girl gave him a lazy smile, holding up her hands. I saw a prick of hair in her armpits.
"Hey," she said, "I'm just trying to buy toilet paper."
"You stole from me," the man said, shading red. "You and your friends, not wearing shoes, running around with your filthy feet, trying to confuse me."
I would have been terrified in the focus of his anger, but the girl was calm, even jokey.
"I don't think that's true." She cocked her head. "Maybe it was someone else."
He crossed his arms.
"I remember you."
The girl's face shifted, something hardening in her eyes, but she remained smiling.
"Fine," she said. "Whatever your thing is."
She looked over at me, her glance cool and distant, like she hardly saw me. Desire moved through me. I surprised myself with how much I didn't want her to disappear.
"Get on outside," the man said. "Go."
Before she left, she stuck out her tongue at the man. Just a peep, like a droll little cat. I'd only hesitated for a moment before following the girl outside, but she was already cutting across the parking lot, keeping up a brisk pace. I hurried behind.
"Hey,"
I called. She kept walking. I said it again, louder, and she stopped, letting me catch up to her.
"What a jerk," I said.
I must have looked shiny as an apple, cheeks flushed with half-drunk effort. She glared in the direction of the store.
"Fat fuck," she muttered. "I can't even buy toilet paper."
She finally seemed to acknowledge me, studying my face for a long moment. I could tell she saw me as young, that my bib shirt, a gift from my mother, was considered fancy. I wanted to do something bigger than those facts. I made the offer before I'd really thought about it.
"I'll lift it," I said, my voice unnaturally bright. "The toilet paper? Easy. I steal stuff from there all the time."
I wondered if she believed me. It must have been obvious how lightly I was wearing the lie. But maybe she respected that. The desperation of my desire. Or maybe she wanted to see how it would play out. The rich girl trying out kid glove criminality.
"You sure?" she said.
I shrugged, my heart hammering. If she felt sorry for me, I didn't see that part. My unexplained return agitated the man behind the counter.
Back again?
Even if I'd really planned to try to steal something, it would have been impossible. I dawdled down the aisles, making an effort to wipe my face of any delinquent glimmer, but the man didn't look away. He glared until I grabbed the toilet paper and brought it to the register, shamed at how easily I snapped into the habit. Of course I wasn't going to steal anything. That was never going to happen. He got on a tear as he rang up the toilet paper.
"A nice girl like you shouldn't hang out with girls like that," he said. "So filthy, that group. Some guy with a black dog." He looked pained. "Not in my store."
Through the popped glass, I could see the girl ambling in the parking lot outside, hand shading her eyes. This sudden and unexpected fortune. She was waiting for me. After I paid, the man looked at me for a long moment.
"You're just a kid," he said. "Why don't you go on home?"
I had felt bad for him until then. "I don't need a bag," I said, and stuffed the toilet paper in my purse. I was silent while the man gave me change, licking his lips, as if to chase away a bad taste. The girl perked up as I came over.
"You get it?"
I nodded, and she huddled me around the corner, her arm hurrying me along. I could almost believe I had actually stolen something, adrenaline brightening my veins as I held out my bag.
"Ha," she said, peeking inside. "Serves him right, the asshole."
"Was it easy?"
"Pretty easy," I said.
"He's so out of it anyway."
I was thrilling at our collusion, the way we'd become a team. A triangle of stomach showed where the girl's dress wasn't fully buttoned. How easily she invoked a kind of sloppy sexual feeling, like her clothes had been hurried on a body still cooling from sweat.
"I'm Suzanne," she said.
"By the way."
"Evie."
I stuck out my hand. Suzanne laughed in a way that made me understand shaking hands was the wrong thing to do. A hollow symbol from the straight world. I flushed. It was hard to know how to act without all the usual polite gestures and forms. I wasn't sure what took their place.
There was a silence.
I scrambled to fill it.
"I think I saw you the other day," I said. "By the hi-ho?"
She didn't respond, giving me nothing to grab onto.
"You were with some girls," I said, "and a bus came."
"Oh," she said, her face reanimating.
"Yeah, that idiot was real mad."
She relaxed into the memory.
"I have to keep the other girls in line, you know, or they'd just fall all over themselves. Get us caught."
I was watching Suzanne with an interest that must have been obvious. She let me look at her without any self-consciousness.
"I remembered your hair," I said.
Suzanne seemed pleased, touching the ends absently.
"I never cut it."
I would find out, later, that this was something Russell told them not to do. Suzanne nestled the toilet paper to her chest, suddenly proud.
"You want me to give you some money for this?"
She had no pockets, no purse.
"Nah," I said. "It's not like it cost me anything."
"Well, thanks," she said, with obvious relief.
"You live around here?"
"Pretty close," I said. "With my mom." Suzanne nodded.
"What street?"
"Morningstar Lane." She made a hum of surprise.
"Fancy."
I could see it meant something to her, me living in the nice part of town, but I couldn't imagine what, beyond the vague dislike for the rich that all young people had. Mashing up the wealthy and the media and the government into an indistinct vessel of evil, perpetrators of the grand hoax. I was only just starting to learn how to rig certain information with apology, how to mock myself before other people could.
What about you?
She made a fluttery motion with her fingers.
Oh, she said, you know, we've got some things going on. But a lot of people in one place,
she held up the bag, means a lot of asses that need wiping. We're low on money at this exact moment, but that'll turn soon, I'm sure.
We. The girl was part of a we, and I envied her ease, her surety of where she was aimed after the parking lot. Those two other girls I'd seen with her in the park, whoever else she lived with, people who'd notice her absence and exclaim at her return.
You're quiet, Suzanne said after a moment.
Sorry.
I willed myself not to scratch my mosquito bites, though my skin was twisting with itchiness. I reeled for conversation, but all the possibilities that appeared were the things I couldn't say. I should not tell her how often and idly I had thought of her since that day. I should not tell her that I had no friends, that I was being shunted to boarding school, that perpetual municipality of unwanted children, that I was not even a blip to Peter.
It's cool, she waved her hand. People are the way they are, you know.
I could tell when I saw you, she continued.
You're a thoughtful person. On your own trip, all caught up in your mind.
I was not used to this kind of unmediated attention, especially from a girl. Usually, it was only a way of apologizing for being zeroed in on whatever boy was around. I let myself imagine I was a girl people saw as thoughtful. Suzanne shifted. I could tell this was a prelude to departure, but I couldn't think of how to extend our exchange.
Well, she said, that's me over there.
She nodded to a car parked in the shade. It was a Rolls Royce, shrouded in dirt. When she saw my confusion, she smiled.
We're borrowing it, she said, as if that explained everything.
I watched her walk away without trying to stop her. I didn't want to be greedy. I should be happy I had gotten anything at all.